You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
We wish to acknowledge that we are on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas, of the New Credit First Nations lands, which lands were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron-Wendat First Nations. Each week, in order to remain aware of our treaty obligations and the relationship we have with our First Nations sisters and brothers, we read one of the 94 recommendations sent to all levels of government by the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. We expect to complete these readings by June 2017, just a little more than a year. This week it's recommendation number 38. We call upon the federal, provincial, territorial, and Aboriginal governments to commit to eliminating the overrepresentation of Aboriginal youth in custody over the next decade.
Good morning, everyone. I come over to sit on the seat because usually every Sunday morning Scott sits over here, and I was hoping maybe I could just kind of absorb some of the inspiration that he shares with you each and every Sunday. He does such an amazing job. But the inspiration that I have for you this morning doesn't really come from me. I got thinking about our mission statement, and our mission statement says that we inspire one another. Well, this past week I was inspired by somebody else, somebody from this congregation, Ruth Gill to be exact. As you know, Ruth has been very instrumental in gathering us together to show the presence at the conference next Sunday. And she shared something in an email that some of you have had the opportunity to read, but I firmly believe it bears listening if you didn't have the opportunity here. She sent this out to a few people. And it's interesting because it kind of builds on what John was talking about in terms of bees. A thought came into my mind as I was out for my morning walk. The lawns and boulevards are bright and cheery, with many dandelions in bloom right now. We all know that. While walking by one home, a man was down on his knees, busily digging them out of his boulevard. I stopped, and I chatted with him and told him how much bees thrive on dandelions. It was a friendly exchange, and I went on my way. However, I could not help but think that that is how much of the United Church, and certainly Toronto Conference, sees or views us at West Hill. We're kind of like weeds. To them, we're the dandelions that need to be dug up quick before we spread any further. And yet, here's the good part, and yet the dandelion is full of good nutrition. Its golden hue is warm and inviting. Their slim stems are sturdy, supporting large flower heads that reach and stretch upwards towards the sun. They reflect the light, and they feed us too. They have very long roots. They're seriously grounded in the earth, as I believe we are at West Hill. The seeds of progressive Christianity will continue to spread their sunshine. Well, it's such beautiful words, just very poetic. Reminded me of listening a bit to Greta when she gets into that place where she touches our hearts as much as she touches our minds. So I thought that would be our grounding for this morning, is us being dandelions. It does take a change of perspective to look at them in the way that Ruth has shared with us, as being something beautiful, something strong, something that grows in the face of adversity. And I would hope that as the gang boards the bus next week, that they all gather as a large group of dandelions heading up to Midland.
Macrina Wiedeker is an author and spiritual guide and Macrina Wiedeker is an author and spiritual guide and a Benedictine monastic of St. Scholastica Monastery in Fort Smith, Arkansas. She travels throughout the United States and Canada as a retreat director. This reading is from Behold Your Life. A pilgrimage is a ritual journey with a hallowed purpose. Every step along the way has meaning. The pilgrim knows that life-giving challenges will emerge. A pilgrimage is not a vacation. It is a transformational journey during which significant change takes place. New insights are given. Deeper understanding is attained. New and old places in the heart are visited. Blessings are received and healing takes place. On return from the pilgrimage, life is seen with different eyes. Nothing will ever be quite the same again. Offered as wisdom for the journey.
Our focus moment this morning was provided by Jim, and it's a reading of a poem called Risk. Risk was written by William Arthur Ward. To laugh is to risk appearing a fool. To weep is to risk appearing sentimental. To reach out to another is to risk involvement. To expose feelings is to risk exposing yourself, your true self. To place your ideas and your dreams before a crowd is to risk loss. To love is to risk not being loved in return. To hope is to risk despair. To try is to risk failure. The person who risks nothing does nothing, has nothing, is nothing. He may avoid suffering and sorrow, but he cannot learn, he cannot feel, he cannot change, he cannot grow, and he cannot truly live. It's now my pleasure to introduce Jim Miller. When I was talking with Jim, I invited him to be part of the service. And one of the reasons that I invited Jim was because I find that it's such a gift for us in this congregation to have individuals who are willing to stand up here and share their experiences and their learning. We go out and we look for folks to inspire us. And to me, nothing can be more inspirational than somebody who's close to home, somebody that we know and have had conversations with. So Jim has been a member at West Hill for quite a few years, and he moved to Huntsville in 2011 when he retired. He had a distinguished career with IBM, which he asked me not to make any reference to at all. And he sums up his new profession I love this. As simply grandfather and volunteer. What could be better than that? So please extend a warm West Hill welcome to Jim Miller.
Thanks, John. I don't know if everybody can hear me or not, but hola, buenos dias. I don't know how many people know about the Camino. I know Debbie Sherwin spoke about the Camino many years ago, her, and she's what a great inspiration for me. And pictures never do total justice to the experience, the sounds, the emotions, the history, the architecture, etc. But I'd like to show you a few to take you through the experience, because it was quite an experience. But some of you who might not know about it, the legend and the story of the Camino is quite fascinating. And I need to leave it to you as individuals, like myself, to decide what is truth, what is fiction, what is just pure legend, or whatever. Following the death of Jesus, the Apostle James went to Spain to spread Christianity. He returned to Jerusalem a few years later, and when the Romans discovered who he was, he didn't have a very good afternoon and they chopped his head off. His followers put his remains on a stone boat that was sailed by angels back to Spain. His followers in Spain took his remains and secretly buried him in the side of a mountain. 800 years later, a villager, seeing lights coming out of the side of the mountain and miracles were happening in the village, the local bishop, because Catholicism was now very entrenched in Spain, declared these to be the remains of the Apostle James, and he was declared a patron saint of the Catholic Church. And a crypt and a cathedral were built in his honor. So James, a.k.a. Santiago, Santiago. The cathedral and the site has been a Catholic pilgrimage now for over 1,000 years. You can see a picture of a pilgrim from the Middle Ages. They didn't have titanium poles, Gore-Tex shoes, all the kind of things that we have today. And what was the route to take? Back then, the route was your front door to Santiago. So it was any route you could take, any way you could get there in Spain. So the pilgrims would stay at farmhouses, monasteries, churches, any way to get there. But also what was important, which is a little bit different than us, who did it, hopped in a plane and flew home, they had to turn around and fly home. So this is a different environment totally than what we have today, what they did for thousands, not thousands, but maybe 1,200 years. The reason we picked the route you just saw is one of the icons of the Camino called the Iron Cross. The Iron Cross is the cross you can see, not very well in that picture, on top of a large pole. And tradition has it, you take a stone from home and you carry it in your possession and you leave it at the Iron Cross. And that stone contains things you want to leave behind in your life. Why did I decide to do the Camino? There wasn't a defining moment for me. My wife passed away 10 years ago. And I saw some documentaries. I talked to Debbie Sherwin, who did the Camino presentation here, read different books, and convinced it would be very important for me in my healing. A couple friends in Huntsville were chatting about it and decided the three of us would do it together. That happens to be my bed. Didn't think you were going to show a picture of my bed, likely, but there's the picture of my bed. But on it is what I have had in my backpack. And essentially, you had to be self-sufficient totally, except for food, to live for about 6 weeks. You also carry a passport, it's called. And the concept there is you stay at hostels, pilgrim hostels, that are run by the church or the government or private. And by having the passport, it allows you to get in at a very favorable rate. And it's also stamped. So when you get to Santiago, you go to the pilgrim office, and they will give you a Compostela, it's called, verifying you actually did the pilgrimage. We had maps, guidebooks and that, but you can essentially get there all the way by just following yellow arrows. Yellow arrows are on the side of houses, on sidewalks, on rocks, wherever. Believe it or not, you can walk 800 kilometers by just following yellow arrows. That's typically the kind of place we would stay. It's a pilgrim hostel. You can see laundry being hung outside, hanging through the windows, people gathering down below, just chatting, fellowship afterwards. That's the kind of room, a typical room, likely one of the most crowded ones that we stayed in. Typically, there were bunk beds, 4 bunk beds per room, sometimes ranging to 25 bunk beds per room. I'll be honest, we stayed at better places different times, but that was very typical. Remember, the Quinas, it was not a vacation. It was a pilgrimage of penitence, of sufferance. Each night, though, was a community meal run by the hostel of fellow pilgrims. We sat around, you chatted, you talked about the day, you met friends from around the world that I still have friends of. Off we go, starting to head into the Pyrenees. So now I'll just take you through a few pictures to give you the experience of what we actually did. We're into the Pyrenees very, very quickly. It didn't take very long. Up and down, though, up and down. But the flora, the heather in the on the mountaintops was just absolutely incredible. Just so inspirational. Barb was our official photographer, and what she would say is, go ahead a little bit and then snap a picture. So most of the pictures you're going to see a certain part of my anatomy which you don't normally see. But it's just awe-inspiring going through these villages that were 1,000 years old. Again, the flora, it just, sometimes the climb's very difficult, but you're always rewarded by seeing things beside you. Roman bridges. We can't build a bridge in Toronto that lasts 100 years on the Gardiner, and the Romans built these things that last 2,000 years. These are not like walking around city blocks. If you notice this picture, most of my laundry is hanging on the back. It did not dry overnight, so you have to carry it on your backpack in order to get it dried during the day. Try doing 25 kilometers a day on roads like that. That takes a little bit of work. That was a struggle, getting up that hill, but I did make it. But then you're rewarded by going through cities. This was not all out in the middle of absolutely nowhere. Beautiful cathedrals, absolutely gorgeous, beautiful 1,000-year-old cathedrals. But we didn't suffer too much. Spaniards love to eat, so we were, anytime there was a tapas bar, we were there. And the food, again, was just absolutely incredible. Salads, on it went. Scallops served in the shells. The scallop shell is actually one of the symbols of the Camino. Many stories behind it. The one I like the best is the spines on the scallop shell represent all the different routes that eventually converge in Santiago. But then back at it. If you notice my leg there, my left leg is brown as can be, my right leg is white. That's because you walk the same direction every day. You never turn around, so you kind of get tanned a little bit differently. I left with 17 pounds. Yeah, it wasn't it. I spent a lot of time practicing brushing my teeth with the minimum amount of toothpaste, the minimum amount of shampoo, to get my backpack down as low as I possibly could. Those were poppies you saw on the right there, just gorgeous. But again, it just had the solitude of being able. Sometimes we would walk together, sometimes we would take a day and just walk by ourselves. Again, through the beautiful villages and whatever. Okay. 1,000-year-old villages just to wander through, so it really, really broke it up. Sorry I'm going through these fairly quickly, but just to try and keep this going. That was through the Pyrenees and the mountains. Going down again, coming out. I needed poles. If I did not have poles, I never would have made it. Some days I was pretty tired. I was ahead of the ladies that particular day, and I just couldn't last any longer, so I parked myself beside that post and waited for them to arrive. What we would do, though, every night, after we showered, washed our clothes, we only had two sets of clothes. So the next day, so what you do is shower, wash your clothes, put your next set on for today, and keep that cycle. If you ever watched the movie Groundhog Day, that was what it was like for about a whole month. Every day was just a repeat of the same day. But what we would do after we did all that, we'd go buy a couple bottles of wine, some cheese and bread, and sit out. And before we went to dinner. And we would talk about the day, plan the next. And it was so. Betsy and Barb are not friends anymore. They're my soulmates. I tended the vineyards, gained Roman bridges, had different pedestrians you came across on the road. You could take all the time you wanted and just sit and pause and reflect. It was just so, so awesome. But we had to keep going. Now, finally, we get to Santiago. You can see the spire of the cathedral there. And that was so awesome and emotional, walking down that road, coming up to the cathedral. That is the cathedral. Try to make it quick. We went to Pilgrim Mass, which is really key. The monks swing this great big incense burner. The history there is supposed to defumigate the pilgrims who've got there. And I could believe that, because we smell pretty bad ourselves someday. Right behind it, though, was a statue. Right behind it was a statue. It's hard to see of the St. James, and you can walk up these steps and hug St. James. That's one of the things you do as a pilgrim. You go to the next one, Peter. These are the steps coming from, marble steps. See how they're worn down after millions of pilgrims have gone down there. The cathedral was undergoing restoration, but you still had the experience of being able to sit out there at night, see the stars, and actually sit there and reflect for a while. So we went up to the coast a little bit, walked back. But essentially, it was 840 kilometers that we did during that time frame. Now, a few things that happened to me. I could show you pictures and tell you stories all day. But the Camino of Santiago is the third most popular Christian pilgrimage in the world after Jerusalem and Rome. Jerusalem is one of faith. Rome is one of love. The Camino is the way of the sword. The sword to be able to conquer your fears. Sorry, just back up one. We saw that sign the first day after coming out of the Pyrenees. And I'll be candid, I was a little afraid signing up to go on this thing. I was going to get lost. Was I going to be able to talk to people over there? Would I find a place to stay, etc.? And when I saw this sign, 790 kilometers to go, I said, you got to be kidding me, Jim. I went and got medically checked out, but I thought I should have gone and seen a neurologist, get my head checked. This is nuts. I'm not going to... We did it. And it's one of the things that's given me confidence to not be afraid. One step at a time, a little bit of diligence. This is Iron Cross. And I took a stone down by the shore in front of my home, put it in my pocket, never kept it out of my possession, and placed it at the Iron Cross. And that has helped me, very emotional, it's helped me considerably in my healing journey. It's hard to see that particular hill in detail, but in the middle of that trail going up, there's a speck that's so small that you can't see. Those are people. And a few months before I was scheduled to go on the Camino, I was diagnosed with an emerging heart condition that my cardiologist said, extreme exertion, I would be at risk for sudden death. He didn't want me to go. Well, you know what the history is beyond that. That was after about 15 kilometers that day, just after lunch, and I was toasted. I made it to the top, but I was shaking pretty bad. But there was a rest area up there. So I went over to the rest area and sat down. And a lady came out to me almost instantaneously and started talking, which is very common on the Camino. And after a little while, she took off. I saw her on the road the next day, and she said, I don't tell anybody on this on the communal, but I'm a paramedic. A paramedic. She said, I'm a paramedic. Then off she went. 3 days later, didn't see her again. 3 days later, I got into some bad food or water. I won't give you the details what happens when you get into bad food and water. But I was checking into one of the hostels and trying to say in half English, half Spanish, Pharmacia, doctor, pharmacy, you know, whatever. Familiar voice behind me says, Jim, you just need lots of electrolytes, rest, and drink lots of water, and you'll be okay. And she reached down into her bag and pulled out 5 packages of electrolytes. Gave them to me. I was fine. Never saw her again. So now, just like the story of the Camino, you and I are going to have to decide, is that just a set of lucky coincidences, or Peter, my physical Camino is over. The journey continues. As Macrina said in her reading, life is seen now through a different set of eyes. Things will never be the same again. For your journey, I wish you a buen camino.
I'm going to do something that I hadn't thought I would do. I'm going to put Jim on the spot. Leave your microphone on. Jim, we have a little extra time. Would you mind entertaining a few questions if there are people that have some questions?
I'm going to get it back on, so I'll try and speak up.
Yeah, Jim.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Does anybody have a question for Jim?
We flew out on April the 20th. We flew to Paris. We took a train down to a couple of connections and arrived at the starting point, Sir Jean-Pied-de-Port, after a couple of days. And then we took one day to rest a little bit and only did 8 kilometers the first day before we got serious about it. The three of us spent about maybe 6 months training. And I would say at $10 a bottle of wine, we spent $10,000 in the training program. Cost us more than the trip, actually. We would start about 6:30 to 7 and quit about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. A couple of reasons, that's about all we could do, but also to get a good place to stay, to get a good bed, because you tried hard to get a lower bunk versus a top bunk. Sorry, I saw another question at the back there. Very good question. She asked about the age range of the participants, and I was quite pleased that it was right across the full spectrum. I think I saw somebody in their 80s, and I saw teenagers. I didn't see young kids, of course, because it's a pretty big commitment. But very few people now do it from the traditional sense of a pilgrimage. A lot of people do it for their own spirituality. Some people do it for the physical challenge, because it is quite something. Some people do it not because it's sort of the in thing, to be candid about it, especially in Europe. So you see all kinds of different people on the road.
Would you go back again, Jim? Or is it a once-in-a-lifetime kind of event?
Half and half. It was so awesome, and I want to do it again, but it's never the same again. Hmm. But it doesn't have to be an 800-kilometer journey to do your own personal Camino. I hope I can make that point a little bit. But doing something that gives you time just to reflect. We'd walk for hours, and no cell phone, no technology, no books, just the universe. Well, that's a good question. I didn't go through any sets of shoes, and I was at a little bit at risk because some of you here might know, but when I was training for the thing at the start, in the year 2013, I was down by the lake and slipped on the ice. I had my backpack on with 25 pounds of barbells, and I slipped on the ice and went down. And I broke this hip here right in half. And it was a displaced fracture, climbed up over top, and by the time I got to the hospital, one leg was 3 inches short in the other leg. So I had to get a bit of reconstructive surgery, and this leg is half inch shorter than the other leg now. So I need corrective shoes. So I just took one pair, and I was a little bit afraid at risk that if something happened, what would I do? Because a heel lift doesn't totally correct it. You need to get a full lift, so it's not like walking 1 foot on high heels and 1 foot on the ground. I did not wear out the shoes. That's a function of the high technology I mentioned before. It was 800 years ago. I like it when I made it through the mountains. John, I don't know how we're doing on time.
We're fine. Any other
questions? I maybe netted this down too much. I'm afraid of yakking on too much. But
no,
the three of us do
good.
This thing at various spots, and we've had trouble culling the thing down to be less than an hour. But with all due respect, it's pretty moving for me, but for other people it isn't the same. So I try and cull this thing down as best I could today. 2015. So at this point in time, 1 year ago, we were about 100 kilometers from Santiago.
Art, did you have a question?
Well, we've been talking about it. There's a nice walk in Scotland that we've been thinking about doing. We had phenomenal weather. The question was on weather or temperatures. We had phenomenal weather, usually in the low 20s, mid-20s, not 27, 28. Never stinking hot. I was worried about that. And never cold. I started out with a fleece some mornings at up in the Pyrenees. I would have something on. But when you live in Huntsville and you get up and it's minus 40 most mornings, you don't feel the cold. I'm sorry, Ben? Yeah. That would be my training program. Correct. Nah. On one leg I did. She asked me if I got a great tan, yes.
Okay, well with that I'll wrap up by thanking Jim for sharing his experiences with us, sharing his thoughts and sharing his emotions. You could tell there were a couple of spots there where he kind of got a little choked up, which is just tells you how important that particular pilgrimage was to Jim. There was one part that you mentioned, Jim, that really touched me, and that is getting over your fears. Firm believer in asking the question, what would you do, what would you feel you could accomplish if you weren't afraid? And if you kind of ask yourself that question, it opens up unlimited possibilities. Just some thoughts on Pilgrim. Google is a wonderful place to go for interesting stuff, but it's also got such a lot of not so interesting stuff. They describe a pilgrim as a traveler who's on a journey, and the word journey has huge meaning in this particular congregation. It's someone who sets out to visit a place because it's connected with someone or something that's important or holds special significance to them. And that journey can take many forms, as Jim has mentioned. It can be a religious journey. It can be a spiritual but not religious journey. It can be a cultural journey. It can be an educational journey. It can be a secular journey. It can be a whole bunch of things. Here at West Hill, we are all also on a journey. So I'm going to ask you to stand because I'm going to send you out of here. We're on a journey as well. And I'll share something with you that I've shared with many people here at West Hill. It was a defining moment for me personally. When I first came to West Hill, it was just shy of 10 years ago. When I heard a sermon, Greta was speaking, and it grabbed me. And Greta described a spiritual journey. She said a spiritual journey was to find that place where your gifts and the needs of the world intersect. And as we hear someone like Jim share his gifts with us, that's the inspiration that allows us to find those places where the needs of the world. And when we look at the world, we don't look at it necessarily in its broadest sense that we're out there to change the world. We look at it in its smallest, most intimate senses, and that is, how do I take my gifts and share them with you and you and you, as Jim has just done this morning? How do I look to change not the globe, but how do I look to affect some change and address the needs of another individual, if not another community? So I bid you this morning to open your hearts to the needs of those around you, to find those individuals that you know need a little compassion, a little love, a little caring, and to apply those gifts that you have to help make a difference. I invite you, especially if you're going to the conference next week, to take that opportunity to share the gift that is West Hill to those that will be there, to share it in a respectful and caring and open fashion. Next Sunday, Greta will be away as well. She'll be speaking in Quebec. However, next Sunday will be an opportunity to hear what took place during the conference. There will be some individuals who will be talking to you about their experiences at the conference meeting. So if you have the opportunity to be here next week, I'm sure it will be interesting and a service that will benefit us all as we move forward on the journey that we are accompanying Greta. So thank you for being here this morning. Thank you, Jim, for sharing your gifts with us and your message with us. And I now invite you to go and share your gifts with the world. Thank you.
Friend of life, for I'm a part of life. With all that I am, I want to honor life with arms open wide, embracing.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.